AOM in her hands. A, he said. AO, take what you want. I ask nothing. A then, stepping down the power another grade, I stood before him in my own person, yet as all women, for by virtue of my womanhood I am a part of Isis, as are all women, and I blessed him as all women could bless their men if they only knew how, bringing through to them the moon power by virtue of their womanhood. I was the archetypal woman with my goddess behind me, and before me was he, the archetypal man, who needed me, and I sang to him the song of the compassion of Isis. It is a strange song, begotten of magic, it is very old, and only priestesses can sing it. Persephone, O moon of men's desire, thy lambent light illumines with cold moon fire. Persephone, Persephone, moon of the night, we long for thee, in outer space the springs of being rise, with tidal sweep life streams across the skies, and in men's hearts awake the slumbering fires. Thou art the queen of dreams and desires. Persephone, Persephone, moon of the night, we come to thee. The passion in the chant was working up, and I could feel Malcolm vibrating to it. Then the motif changed, the power was being brought through to earth now. The moon is riding high and clear, O lovely one, draw near, to lonely men on lonely ways come down and dream of silver haze. Persephone, Persephone, all in the end shall come to thee. I heard a sound like a sob from Malcolm and he held out his arms to me. I came to him, for something human had to be given that man if he were not to break. He took hold of me and crushed me to him in a kind of agony. It was terrible. I could feel every muscle in him rigid with strain. Presently he dropped back, exhausted, panting and sweating, and I took my soft chiffon handkerchief and wiped his face. He lay quietly with his eyes shut, and then a hand came out, feeling for me like a child's. I put mine in it, and sat down on the edge of the couch beside him. And so the vigil of the temple sleep began. The great throne was no use to me, I had to endure it upright, unsupported, in a kind of crucifixion of muscular strain. It was the asana of vicarious sacrifice. After a time the muscles lock and become rigid and the worst is over, until one has to move at the conclusion. I have always found that these curious, locked positions are necessary to the bringing through of power, and that the power brought through is in proportion to the pain the postures cause. I am very supple, and very strong, and can endure more than most, being inured to such things, but they are real Calvaries. At first I could not concentrate because I was trembling with the strain of the posture, but presently the muscles became locked and my mind was free. Malcolm was sleeping peacefully as a child, his storms over for the time being. His face was lined and weary, but nevertheless it was at peace. I sat and looked at him. I thought of the complete uselessness, and wastefulness, and folly of the sacrifice that had been demanded of him by conventional morality. It did no one any good that this man should sacrifice his manhood at an empty shrine, and the injury to him was cruel, for the love side of life is not an ideal, but a function. I thought of the castration of the priests of Attis, the foot binding of the Chinese women, the headboards of the Red Indian babies, and all the needless, purposeless, long-drawn-out torture inflicted by the superstitions and conventions of mankind, of which our orthodox morality is one of the worst, and with the power of the magic that was upon me at that moment I cursed our modern Moloch to its face and struck at its feet of clay, and what I did then because Malcolm's suffering had moved me, I did magically for all men placed as he, in their varying degrees of frustration and starvation, for thus is magic wrought. That which I did then, in those hours of intense power and emotion, up there in the darkness of the moon temple with the river in flood outside, went into the group mind of the race to work like leaven, as I knew it would when I called Malcolm to the right. There is freedom in the world today because of what I did that night, for it opened the first tiny rift in the great barrier and the forces began to move, channeling and eroding as they flowed, till presently the strength of waters came flooding through like the bursting of a dam and all resistance melted away. So the night went by, and the goddess visited me as she had visited him, and I once again renewed my vision of her. When Malcolm said I was she, he was both right and wrong. All women are Isis, and Isis is all women in that her power manifests through them according to their degree. Some bring through more, and some bring through less, but none, unless they deliberately inhibit, are without it. A trained priestess like myself brings it through in all its plenitude of power. Not all men can stand it. I need strong men about me, like Malcolm, to enable it to come through in its strength. It is a great and glorious thing, and brings health to the soul. The Greeks made a god of it and called it Dionysos, but after the ecstasy comes tranquility, which is the blessing of Isis. I do not know how any can argue that that is wrong which brings so profound a peace. Footnote, asana, word mentioned above is meditation postures used in yoga. Chapter 14. What Malcolm thought when he awoke in the morning to find himself in the temple with me beside him, I do not know, for I, too, was asleep, muscle locked in my asana, bolt upright and unsupported. The first thing I knew was that he was sitting up and staring at me. It was practically impossible for me to move without assistance, and Malcolm had to support me and help me while I got my cramped limbs unlocked. His gentleness was a marvel to me, and his knowledge saved me the worst of the pain that comes from disentangling an asana. Muscle by muscle, he rubbed and kneaded the stiffness out of my numbed limbs. Finally, when I could once more move freely, I stood up and took him by the shoulders and said, "Ao, well, how are you? How did you fare?" "Ao, my dear, ao," he said, "Ao fared well. I have been blessed, and you know it, for you know who blessed me, ao," and he lifted my hand from his shoulder and kissed it. Malcolm, a middle-aged married man, with graying hair, thick-set, stocky and rough-mannered, might not be considered a figure of romance by many, but to me, as he stood there before me and thanked me in his taciturn way, there was a beauty and nobility about him that shone like a great light in a dark place. I led him over to the western wall and drew back a curtain revealing a shuttered window I had made for ventilation. We threw back the shutters, and there before us shone the river in the morning light. Malcolm chuckled and pointed to the far Tilda sectionade across the water, where two lighted windows shone incongruously in the grey of the morning. "Ao left my lights on, ao," he said. "Ao, she'll get a scolding when I get back." Ah, the sun was just coming up in a clear sky and the water began to glitter. It was ebb tide now, but we saw by the state of the street that flood water had come to the very door during the night while we kept the temple vigil. There is a curious affinity between the moon powers and water. I have never yet known moon magic to be worked without water coming into it in some way or other. Then we set out to go downstairs. Malcolm went first to give me a hand, for I was still very stiff, but soon wearying of this laborious progress. He picked me up without a "by your leave" and carried me the rest of the way. When he laid me down on the big sofa at the end of the fireplace, he leant over me for so long that I thought he meant to kiss me, but instead he suddenly straightened his back and stood staring at the fire for several minutes. Then he walked off to the bathroom without a word, reappearing presently, dressed and shaved and impassive, to come face to face with me, Yard, who favored him with a wink. Malcolm turned scarlet, and I thought for a moment he was going to strike him. But Miyard, oblivious of his danger, was placidly laying the table for two. Malcolm pulled himself together and came over to me and looked at me with anguish in his eyes, only to find that I was smiling. Then he smiled too, but wryly. Poor fellow, he was as innocent of all offense as an unborn child, but, as he had himself remarked, appearances always went against him. I insisted that he should claim a holiday from the hospital, goodness knows. It owed him one, and for the next fortnight he spent his days with me, worked with me every evening, and slept on the big sofa in the hall. Meanwhile, also at my behest, his rooms were completely redecorated and refurbished. All the dreadful old lumber with which they were garnished was disposed of, and new furniture, chosen by me, was sent in. Needless to say, I never showed myself within range of vision of Malcolm's landlady, though I presume she suspected my presence. Men of Malcolm's type do not suddenly re-equip themselves along aesthetic lines without some kind of external influence being brought to bear on them. However, Malcolm was very much more comfortable, with a good bed and a modern grate, and properly shaded lights, and began to take quite a pleasure in his belongings. Then, night after night, we worked together, and I taught him magic. Concentration presented no difficulty to Malcolm, for his was a trained mind. Visualization, too, was easy because of his habit of making diagrams for his students. Neither had he any nervousness about giving himself up to the forces, but he could not, dared not, let himself go with me. It was the most difficult thing in the world to get him to separate the woman from the priestess. As the twig is bent, the tree will grow, and Malcolm had been bent with a vengeance. Again and again I tried to get him to see that he must deal with me as he would deal with a patient, and that I would do the same by him, but it was no use. Malcolm was afraid of emotion. He could not realize that one could keep the forces on the astral, and handle them there. He reminded me of a horse that fears to cross a creaking bridge lest it will not bear him. He could not realize the strength, certainty and accuracy of the astral workings in skilled hands. The terrible Puritan conscience, the most ignorant thing on God's earth, had made a deformity of his mind, and it was spiritual orthopedics to bring him back to naturalness. Only after infinite patience and plain speaking did he come round to the view that sex and sin are not synonymous terms. It was, I think, only his scientific training that made him see that sex is a physiological function with psychological results. Then, and then only, did he dare to turn a critical eye on the code to which he had been chained as a child. Once he got to the point of examining it, however, things moved rapidly, for Malcolm's mind was innately scientific and despite himself he could not help looking facts in the face. "Ao, do you think my loyalty has been a waste of time?" Ao said to me one day, for he was nothing if not wholehearted. "Ao, think it has probably taught you a great deal." I replied. "Ao, you would not be working with me today if you had not been through that hard discipline, but I do not think it has conferred the slightest benefit on your wife. Ao, no, I don't suppose it has. I could have had half a dozen mistresses, and she would have been none the wiser and none the worse off. Do you think me a fool, Lilith? Ao, do you remember the story of the Athenian who erected an altar to the unknown god? You have worshipped the ideal. You have sacrificed to it and kept back no part of the price, that cannot go for nothing on the inner planes. It must have generated power. I think you have been blind, my friend, as you would not be blind in any other matter, blind because your mind was put in blinkers when you were a child. Now the blinkers are off and it will remain to be seen whether you have the courage to act. A lack of courage has never been one of the many weaknesses I am credited with. A all the same, you lack courage in this matter, I fancy. A he thought for a minute. Ao, yes, I believe I do. It is the one thing in my life I have hesitated to grip. I ought to have faced up to it years ago and been fair to myself as well as Eva. If I had made a clean cut, it would have healed. A he thought for a while. At length he spoke, as if to himself, "Ao, who is to be the judge in these matters? Is one never justified in taking the law into one's own hands?" "Ao, there lies the difficulty," said I. "Ao, it is easy enough to legislate for a perfect world, but we have to live in this imperfection. If we all took the law into our own hands whenever we felt like it, there would soon be no law left. While it is the law, we have got to keep it, and wait for other heights in other lives. That is where we who believe in reincarnation have the advantage. But though we may keep a foolish law, there is no reason why we should respect it. Though we may bow the neck to force majeure, there is no reason why we should bow the mind. The Queen's writ does not run on the inner planes. We are free the dot ao free to do what we please. Ao, no, never that. There is no such thing as absolute freedom, there is only the relative freedom of the right to choose the code one will observe. Free in mind, Rupert, free to know an idol from the true God. Free to recognize a social code as a social code, and not as the word of the Lord. Free to find God in your own way, my friend, and not in somebody else's. Free to cut away the conventions and get down to fundamentals. Ao, you may not be able to do all that in this life, to be free as I am free, who have been upon the path for many lives, but you can at least make a start. You can at least win to the intellectual freedom that admits of no authority that can override the truth. And remember, where you end in this incarnation, you can start in the next, and whatever ground you gain has broken trail for those who come after you. A.A.O.A. The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church, A.T.M.A. said Malcolm. A.O. would be quite willing to be a martyr. It is in my blood, my forebears were covenanters, but is one ever justified in offering up another person? Would I be justified in sacrificing my wife, for instance? A.A.O. There is such a thing as abstract justice, Rupert. One has an obligation to be just to oneself as well as generous to other people. Marriage is the only form of contract in which the law compels personal service, and in that I think it makes a mistake. Unwilling service is never satisfactory service. Marriage is also the only form of contract in which the defection of one party does not automatically release the other. How can we expect what works badly in every other human relationship to work well in this particular one? Of course it doesn't. That is why there is so much low-grade happiness, apart from the actual wreckage with which the world is strewn. A.A.O. The churches wouldn't agree with you. A.A.O. The churches can please themselves. It is no business but their own what conditions they make for admission to their communion. The mistake comes when they use their influence to legislate for people outside their communion. History has never seen any good result come from religious meddling in politics. Do you realize that at one time, in Salt Lake City, it was compulsory to indulge in polygamy if you could afford it? That there were heavy penalties, both in this world and the next, for remaining faithful to one wife? The state has no right to deal with anything save the law of contract in legislation for marriage. There ought to be freedom of conscience in this as in other matters. How can the conscientious Catholic legislate for the conscientious Mormon, both deeply religious men according to their lights, and both quite sure that God is on their side? And who is to judge between them? The Church of England by law established? The assorted chapels that established themselves? Or the great bulk of the electorate who care for none of these things and have to cast a single vote on a mixed issue of social service, foreign policy, finance and divorce reform at one and the same election? A.A.O. It's beyond me, Lilith. I don't know, I can't judge. I am too personally involved to be impartial. If you had been in my shoes, what would you have done? A.A.O. If I were in your shoes I should have your temperament, and therefore would presumably do the same as you have done. If you ask me what you, with your temperament and your circumstances should do at the moment, I would say to you, do nothing on the physical plane, stand back from your own personality, withdraw into your own higher self that lives on eternally behind all your incarnations, and try and get down to fundamental principles and adjust yourself thereto. When you have made that adjustment, you will find things will work themselves out on the physical plane. That is the greater magic. A.A.O. And what is the lesser magic? A.A.O. What we do with our minds in the light of the greater magic. A.A.O. What you have been showing me? A.A.O. Yes. A.A.O. Won't the greater magic work without all that? A.A.O. It will, but it works very slowly, and probably not in this life. A.A.O. Shall I injure my wife if I do as you suggest? A.A.O. No, you will not touch your wife, for you will work on nobody but yourself. How the way will open up, no one can foresee. It may be through a change in your circumstances, or it may be through a change in your feelings, but changes there will be, for great forces are set in motion by these means, and they are forces of fundamental right. We do not take the law into our own hands or outline the results in any way whatever. But I will tell you one thing for your information, Rupert, for this you need to know, whatever alteration might come about in your circumstances, it would make no difference in your relationship to me. A. Malcolm's face underwent a curious change at these words. For a moment there was a flash of something savage, and then a look of relief. A.O. I'm glad you told me that, Lilith, A. he said. A.O. It has cleared up a lot. A.O. It has not cleared up anything, Rupert, A.I. said. A.O. May be a free woman, but you, unless you change, will never be a free man. A.O. He looked bewildered. Ao never have married, Ai said, Ai and I never shall marry. Why should I? It is not my work to bring souls into the world. Aoc, Ai said. Ao, you are a priestess, set apart. Ai, yes, Ai said I. Ao, that is it? I am a priestess set apart. Ai, things went much better after that talk. Malcolm, though he would have denied it strenuously, was an innately religious man, and life had no meaning for him unless he could relate it to the fundamental verities. I understood him, because that too is my nature. Neither of us could have found any satisfaction in what we believed to be wrong or thought to be futile. The fact that my code was not the world's code did not affect the fact that it was my code, and who shall judge another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. The sin against the Holy Ghost is to break one's own code, or so I think, and I have myself seen the power of God come down as a flaming fire. So I took Malcolm in hand, leaving him to work out his own problem in the light of the greater magic, for that is a thing in which no one may interfere, in which no one can assist. Every soul dreads that path alone. But teaching him the use of the lesser magic which gives effect to the greater, the lack of which explains why we so often have to wait till heaven for our prayers to be answered. I must be pardoned if I speak in riddles on these matters, but not otherwise can they be spoken of. But what I cannot explain I can describe, and I will tell what I did with Malcolm. Night after night, during that well-earned holiday from the hospital, I made Malcolm perform with me the simple ritual, so ancient and so effective, the ritual of the opening of the gates that enables one to pass out into another plane, or another state of consciousness, according as one uses the terms, for a plane is a state of consciousness and a state of consciousness is a plane. I taught him the way of going out, the imaginary journey that ends on the astral, and in my company I made him take it night after night, lying on the couch and looking in the mirror, till the way became familiar to him and he could pass down that path alone, and, what is more important, come back by the same route. The inner planes became real to him, and he became sure of their existence and learnt to gauge their conditions by his own reactions. Once he turned on me and said, Ao, you are making me dream an artificial dream. This is not real. Ao, it is real for you, and it is true for you. What more do you want? Ao replied. Ao, but it is not real. Ao, he protested. Ao, I'm deluding myself. Ao, it is real on its own plane, I said I. Ao, and that is the plane of causation. We do not know how these things work, we only know that they do work. What you build in your imagination is a channel of force. The more real it is to you, the more powerfully it works, and all the things you call theatrical in my doings are simply designed to make it real to you. A. So I talked to him, and taught him, and let him get used to things, and waited. We described our visions to each other, the visions I built and the visions he saw, going over the same ground again and again till they were utterly familiar to us both. This is the mise-en-scene of magical working that creates the astral temple. Our temple was now built, though Malcolm thought it was all imagination, and the next stage was ready to begin, the stage of making a priest of him. People try and make priests of themselves in order to be fit for the temple, but it should be the other way about, make the temple first, and then make the priest. There are good reasons for this. I also taught Malcolm mystical alchemy, which is the yoga of the West. I taught him how to pick up the forces from the earth center and draw them up the spine. These form the basis of all that follows. Only those who can do this can do magic. We in the West work with a tree, in the East they work with flowers, but it is the same thing. Malcolm said to me once, Ao, there is only one thing I don't like about you, Lilith, and that is the streak of ruthlessness in your nature. Ao, it goes with my tiger teeth, A said I. Ao, would you care to be operated on by a soft-hearted surgeon with blunt instruments? Ao would not, I said he. But still I had to bide my time and dared not show my hand to Malcolm, but had to wait upon his slow growth into realization. Ao, if you only knew, A thought I, A how ruthless I really am, and the nature of the risks I am taking, I wonder what you would say. A there is in me a tireless patience and tenacity, I can keep on keeping on, and it is the most powerful magic there is. I was in no hurry, there was plenty of work to be done on Malcolm before we were ready for the next stage. I wanted to make him remember his past lives. That is important in magic, because a man who remembers his past lives has tremendous resources behind him. I also wanted to teach him the art of the serpent power, so little understood in the West, in which I was a specialist, when that befell which was due to befall, which I had known might befall any time when I told Malcolm that no change in his circumstances would make any change in our relations. He came to me one morning with a letter in his hand and bid me read it, walking about the room agitatedly while I did so. It bore the Worthing postmark and I gathered it was from his wife's companion. Mrs. Malcolm, she said, had been going on very well indeed, but had been having a slight setback in the shape of a return of her phlebitis. However, there was no cause for anxiety, it was a very slight attack, and Dr. Jenkins said there was no occasion for him to come down. I handed the letter back to Malcolm. I could not see what there was in it to agitate the man. A.O. What ought I to do, Lilith? A.O. Do as you are advised by the doctor on the spot, A said I. A.O. Or if you aren't satisfied, get a second opinion. Don't you take the responsibility again. It is too much to ask of any man. A. He looked relieved. He, the most dogmatic, self-assertive, cocksure individual on earth in medical matters, was only too thankful to be told what to do by me in his private affairs. A.O. Get through on the phone if you're worried, A.I. added. He picked up the receiver and put through the call. In a few moments, by a miracle as marvelous as any of my magic, he was speaking to his wife's companion. I could, of course, only hear one side of the conversation, but it was not difficult to perceive that Malcolm had got a fool to deal with, and a stubborn fool into the bargain. They had, apparently, dispensed with the nurse because Mrs. Malcolm did not like strangers about her, and the maid and the companion considered themselves quite competent to do whatever nursing was necessary. Malcolm, however, did not consider them competent, and did not mince his words in saying so, without, however, making any impression on the foolish creature I could hear bleating away at the other end of the line. Finally, he slammed down the receiver. A.O. Well, A. he said, A.O. Jenkins is prepared to see her through without a trained nurse. What do I do about it? A.O. Tackle Jenkins, A. said I. Another call went through, but Jenkins was not available and a message had to be left. Malcolm paced the room like a caged tiger. I still could not see what all the fuss was about. Presently the bell rang for the return call, and he made a dive for the receiver. But again I heard the same twittering bleat from the other end, instead of a man's deep tones. Malcolm put the receiver down, and came over to me by the fire. My wife says she has perfect confidence in Dr. Jenkins, and refuses a second opinion. What do I do now, Lilith? Go down and make a row? A.O. No, A said I. A.O. Why should you? It is obvious they are quite happy in their own way and that you are not wanted. What is the point of forcing yourself on them? A. Malcolm rested both his hands on the high mantelpiece and stood staring into the fire. A.O. Why wouldn't that damn fool Jenkins speak to me himself? A. He demanded, but that was a question I could not answer. A.O. Lilith, I ought to go down, I'm going. Goodbye. A. Before I had time even to hold out my hand in farewell, he had turned on his heel and left the room, and I heard the front door slam behind him. I felt exceedingly anxious about him. It seemed to me that another brainstorm like the last, and there would not be very much left of Malcolm. However, there was nothing I could do but wait. Next morning, before I was out of bed, the phone rang. A.O. Worthing wants you, I was told. I waited, and a voice said, A.O. She's gone, Lilith. I was so startled I could not speak for a moment, and Malcolm's voice came again, very agitated. A.O. Lilith, are you there? A.O. Yes, I'm here. I was so startled by your news I did not know what to say. What happened? A.O. Cloth shifted, same as before. Struck the heart this time. Finished. Gone. All over. A, my friend, A, I said, A, is there anything I can do for you?